What up, everybody? Welcome to the Smoking Tire Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Innova Electronics. Innova Electronics is a solutions company that utilizes their automotive aftermarket experience and diagnostic expertise to empower the automotive aftermarket to find the problem and to fix the problem. Innova was founded in Orange County, California in 1990 and has 30 plus years of automotive experience. They focus on automotive diagnostics, and they hire top-notch ASC technicians dedicated to improving your vehicle's usage. They have OBD1 and 2 diagnostic tools ranging from the entry-level car scan reader 5110, which diagnoses everything from check engine warnings to road trip readiness, even ideal for pre-inspecting a used car prior to purchase, okay? Made for all levels of experience, or they've got the CarScan Pro 5610 scanner. This is the most feature-rich scan tool in the range, empowering the enthusiast-level DIYer with professional-level functionality. The 5610 has a special reset functions, which is what dealers have. They've got an enhanced data stream for systems like ABS, transmission in your engine, and they have bi-directional control. So you can send commands to the vehicle to test functionalities like fuel pump or electronic parking brakes. It all goes through the Repair Solutions 2 app. Dude, this is a serious thing we've got going on here. The Innova Electronics units are available online and in-store at Innova.com, Amazon, and nearly all major auto parts stores. But here's the deal. You go to Innova.com, right? Innova.com. Use code TST at discount to receive a 20% discount off your order plus free shipping. That offer is good until October 16th. So go to Innova, Innova.com. Use code TST at checkout to receive a 20% discount off your order and free shipping until October 16th. At Innova, you find the problem and then you fix the problem. Innova.com, code TST. We're also brought to you by Crown & Caliber, guys. Crown & Caliber is what's up. You should always buy your watches used. You should never buy a brand new watch unless you're on one of them hot lists to get the new joints. You know what I'm talking about? You gotta get the used watches, right? And Crown & Caliber is the hub of used luxury timepieces, whether it's Rolex, Tudor, Omega, Panerai, even Patek and AP at the high end. Man, they've got it all. They've got over 2,000 watches in stock. They've got a team of watchmakers and service technicians to make sure this stuff is working right, and they have limited mechanical warranty. That way, if you get a watch, even if it's an older watch, a vintage watch, if it's not working right, they will make it right at Crown & Caliber. They're good folks over there. Crown & Caliber's always got something going on, whether it's giveaways or the blog, helping you learn about watches. They'll even take in your trade or buy your watch from you. That's why we love them. CrownandCaliber.com for all your secondhand watch needs. All right, on this episode of the Smoking Tire Podcast, very special episode today because we are celebrating the life and the spirit of my dearly departed friend, Chef Carl Ruiz, who died a year ago, September 22nd, of an untimely heart attack. The chef was an inspiration to anyone who ever met him, and today we have one of his best friends, if not his best friend, Chef Guy Fieri, is on the program, and we're talking about Carl, we're talking about cars, we're talking about food, and we're going to finish it off with how to set up your kitchen at home for success. So a very special guest and someone I'm proud to call a friend, Chef Guy Fieri on the Smoking Tire Podcast. All right. Thank you for the time. The mayor of Flavortown is in the house. How are you, sir, on the one-year anniversary of the death of our friend Carl?
Is that coincidence that this happened, or did we plan it this way?
That you're on the show on the one-year anniversary?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't like to ask my very famous friends for things, including doing my show. I think that's why I have famous friends. But considering we were coming up on the year, I thought I might cash in my karma chips with you and ask you to do it. And it's a coincidence that it's actually today. That was based on your availability.
That is actually a coincidence.
Yeah.
We had a bunch of people over here at the house yesterday, and
I miss him. I miss him every single day.
It's such a, I don't know if I told you, but I had a, I've had some very unique experiences. I've never done the podcast with the headphones in. This sucks.
Your assistant told me that you're not into headphones, and I figured it was because of it was a hair thing.
No, I'm not into them. I have those the buds in, but I can't hear myself.
Oh yeah,
you, know,
you
like
sound
on
good
a, on a stage. Oh well, thank you.
You sound like someone I've heard before somewhere.
It's old news, but anyway, we had a great gathering of everybody last night or yesterday over here. A bunch of friends came, and we were telling stories and. Everybody was kind of sharing stuff, and we sent out a great video. You know who Gloria is, who's a,
yes,
an amazing person, and so Gloria has really kept beating the drum and really put together this fantastic Ruizing tipping program. So today we're encouraging everybody to go out and eat and to tip big. And I guess People Magazine just picked it up. And
oh really? Oh, that's fabulous. Yeah. I did it last night. My wife and I did. We were at the Ojai Valley Inn last night, which is a lovely little place in Ojai, and we tipped 150% on dinner and wrote Ruizing for life or Ruizing forever on the receipt. And the waitress was like floored. It was great. It felt really good.
You know what? The restaurant industry has served us in so many ways in our society, and it's, these folks are just amazing. You know, I've been in the restaurant business my whole life, and knowing, especially with COVID, what happened, you got a lot of people that are, you know, single family. You got a lot of students. You got a lot of people that are working two jobs, and the restaurant industry has really been that amazing opportunity for people. And folks that don't have as much education, really want to work themselves into a career, on and on and on. And Carl loved the industry so much, and he was such a even when Carl didn't have money, he was always tipping big. He'd borrow $20 from me so he could leave a fat tip. And like, did we just leave that tip together? But he gives it to her. Here you go, babe. You know?
Going to a restaurant with Carl was one of my favorite experiences because, you know, he liked to graze, you know, so he'd order everything on the menu and then take two bites and he'd share it with the table next to him that they all thought he was nuts.
That's
you
awesome.
Know, and then the chef would come out who had always heard of him and then they find out he was there. They start sending more food. It was just insanity to go out to dinner with Carl, man. There was nothing like it. It was crazy.
No, and the thing is he knew so much about food that he was able to sit there. And I remember one time we went to a Chinese restaurant in New York City, and he was sitting there giving me the nomenclature of the gooey duck. I'm like, Carl, how you don't even know where you parked your car, but you're able to break down for me the gooey duck, you know? Or I'm just all kind of kanji, you know? Here comes Carl with the history of kanji. Yeah,
he sure. told me, you know, he gave me a great book recommendation that I've read twice now. It's called What Einstein Told His Cook. Are you familiar with that book?
No.
It's a really cool book that I think is that Carl probably studied a lot. And it's just about the chemical compositions of food and why certain food behaves different ways. And it really is a very interesting thing. I recommend people.
What's it called?
What Einstein Told His Cook. And there are two volumes. There's a volume one and a volume two. I'm in the middle of volume two right now. Great book.
Do they come with pictures?
They're like drawings, but yes.
I'm always good when there's pictures.
Yeah. So I've heard Carl's version of how he met you and how that really changed his life. Can I get your version?
I'm texting my assistant to get this book.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we've made an impression. Just go and get this book now.
No, I love that. Anything has to do with food history and food. You know, I try to explain that to people all the time about, you know, like, you show me something in the world of food, and I'll tell you, I most likely know how it got there.
Yeah.
You know, like, why do we have sausage? Why do we have head cheese? Why do we have chipotle peppers? Why do we have butter? You know, why do we have these things? Why do we have cheese? You know, because it all derived from not having refrigeration and having, you know, a plethora and how we're going to, you know, bacala, you know, salted, on and on and on and on. So anytime I hear of a book like this that can give some, Harold McGee has a great, probably I think the Bible of food. But anyhow, what did Carl tell you? Because this came up yesterday when all the crew was here at the house. And you've been here. You came to the house.
Yeah, I love your house. Your house is the coolest. Your house told me so much about you as a person. Not only how warm and inviting you are, because when I was there, you were having a party not just for Carl's friends, but for the construction crew that had built your house and their families, and I thought that was amazing. But your attention to detail in the house was incredible. I want to talk about your kitchen in a little bit. I love your house. But what Carl told me about meeting you is that after you had won Food Network Star, he saw you on the street. He said that you were going to be the future, and could he take you to lunch or something like that? And he impressed you over lunch, and you ended up giving him a job. Is that close?
It's not. It's close. It's a little more factual than what our boys were talking about yesterday. So what had happened is I'd gone to an Italian restaurant in Chelsea and had a matriciana, one of my favorite dishes, with the quinjali, with the pico, with the pork cheek, done in the spicy sauce. And I'd come walking back, and I'm walking back to the hotel, and I see this, I hear this Cuban music going on in this restaurant. And that was a restaurant called San Cubano, where Carl was the chef. So I go in there, just kind of peek my head in there to see what's going on, and there's Cuban music playing, which I love Cuban music. And I sit down at the bar, and I think I'm having, beer or something. And up comes Carl. And he's right in my face, because you remember just how, you're the guy that won the show. You won the show. And he knew everything about me. I mean, he could, because you knew what, I mean, he was so mighty, smart.
Yeah.
And he remembered the things he wanted to remember.
Yeah.
And he's like, I this whole thing, and California, and Texas sabis, and your restaurants, let me make you something to eat. I said, no, bro, Thank you. I was actually a little worried about how sane this guy was. And he said, let me make you something to eat. And I just eat. And I'm like, no. And he's like, okay, I'll be right back. So he comes up and he brings empanadas and he brings this pork shank and this whole thing. And I'm like, dude, I'm not hungry. Okay, you just try it. And then he brings up this big snapper, fried snapper. I'm like, you're killing me, man. And so every time I would come back to town, I was coming to town to shoot shows. I would run in, I'd go see Carl, because the restaurant was maybe a block from the Food Network studios. And so we kind of became buddies. And then he was having some trouble. Things weren't working out at the restaurant. And I said, listen, why don't you come to California? I got a new restaurant concept I'm opening. Why don't you come do this? So that's how it all came about. But no, from day one, he was in my face.
Yeah.
Making sure that, but he's just such a, just the neatest times. And I've got some great pictures of us when we were young, and that's one of my favorites right there.
Was just like, for a guy whose job it was to make food, you've never met someone who was just so good, present company excluded, sorry guy, but at broadcasting. I mean, what a natural broadcaster, especially in radio, format, because he had to go long. He couldn't do it in 2 seconds, although he had every one-liner, ready to go.
I'm not touching that. I'll tell you what it was. I saw this talent in him early on. I mean, the whole thing about how it all came about is I could see the energy. I saw the energy. I knew how witty he was. I knew his food cred was massive, this whole thing. And I'm really, the only thing I'm really remiss about, Matt, is that, a lot of things, but is that he never got his own show. And we tried several times to pull some things off, and it was going to happen. I mean, it was going to be awesome.
Yeah.
We just.
The Carl show could have been the best show ever. Yeah. It really could have. Because you just, all you had to do is spin him up and point a camera at him. It was not difficult. It was very, very easy.
My favorite moment.
So what is that, a triple G moment? What are you holding up? I can't really see it so well.
That's a fire extinguisher filled with milk.
Oh, my God.
That is gross. So,
No. It's not gross when you think what's going on.
Oh, chicken wings. Is this chicken wing heat?
Carl hated – Carl couldn't handle spice.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
See, people think that because he's Cuban, that Cuban food is not spicy.
No, it's pretty bland, actually.
So, good vinegar and good, there's good flavor. Don't get me wrong, I love Cuban food. But it's not spicy. The only Latin food that's really spicy, I think, is Mexican, or the main one. So, I would put him in the spicy episodes. And it was just comedy relief 101. I mean, that's all we did was laugh. And so he would eat something spicy, and there wasn't anything for him to drink. So every time something would happen, like I gave him the helmet.
The helmet of milk. Yeah, I remember the helmet of milk, yeah.
So I had the helmet of milk. So this one, this sits on my desk. This is my,
The fire extinguisher
this
of milk.
Right here.
That's good.
That is him getting, I mean, and look at it. Look how far away. It just
hold it closer to the camera.
With the milk.
Hold it closer to the camera. Oh, yeah, he's got it. He's getting it right in the face there. He looks like he kind of really needs it, too. He's not resisting.
Listen, he's dying. He doesn't. He had milk out of a gigantic baby bottle. He had milk out of a fish tank. He had milk in so many different ways. But I think one of my favorites, though, was Carl on the radio, like you said. Carl on the radio, his voice, his dictation, his vocabulary, his accent, his laugh. Oh, you know.
I just love listening to him, like, explain shit. Like, I remember him on an episode of Opie once where he broke down the hierarchy of criminals and at what levels the cops actually allow them to continue committing crimes. And, like, he knew way too much about this, but it was very, very – he's just so good at explaining it.
You didn't know what was bullshit and what wasn't because he was so convincing
yeah.
the way he would tell it to you.
It didn't really matter. It was so funny. I didn't care. It was great. That hour, it was you and Carl and Alex Garnaschelli with Opie is like my favorite 2 hours of radio like ever recorded,
man. Is that Penny Chicken?
Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to tell you something, Matt. I thought I seriously had hurt myself laughing. I thought I had pulled the fat. I was on the floor. I mean, I couldn't. And the thing was, I don't know if you know the whole premise of the story, but we were talking about Carl catering in his car.
Oh, yeah.
Loading up these big trays of chicken in a hotel, an aluminum hotel pan, and going around the corner and the chicken spilling out. And I'm like... Oh, how gross, dude. What happened? A chicken breast squirts out the side of the catering tray and ends up underneath your seat, and then it's a penny gets stuck to it, the randomness in your seat, and then it's back in the hotel tray, and people are at the wedding going, this has penny on it, penny chicken. And Carl makes it into some new fantastic dish called penny chicken. Oh, gosh. And then and once Carl would start laughing, and I would start laughing, and he would start laughing, and I would start laughing, I mean, then it was ridiculous.
When he came to my wedding, he turned our food into other food. Like, at his table, they were eating something that was completely different than the rest of us were eating. He had taken all the food and rearranged it into other shit, and he was running around, like, stuffing in people's face, like, here, eat this. I'm like, Carl, we're not even serving this. Where did you get this? He's like, I made it. I'm like, with what? With what you had. Like, okay, lunatic.
No, exactly how it was.
Can I ask, like, one of the things I admire most about you, Guy, is that you've got at least 3 television shows, 3 that I can think of offhand. How many restaurants are you running at right now?
Well, we're not, the restaurants are tough because of COVID. We're just getting back online, but I think before COVID started, we were 80.
Yeah, a lot. How, and you're doing television, you're traveling, one of your shows is a road show. How do you do all this and stay sane, level-headed, remain a nice person, do all the charity you do?
Wait, where did you come up with all those?
I don't know.
Sane, level-headed. You know what it is? It's surrounding yourself with great people. I just have an amazing team. I just have an amazing team of from my wife and our kids and my parents and my buddies to my culinary team to my ranch team. You name it. I mean, I just really have a very blessed to have so many great people around. And that synergy of it's not just 30 people doing it. When we work collectively together, it's 1,000 people getting it done. So we got a lot of really dynamite people that make this happen, and I try to make sure that I share the opportunity, and everything doesn't have to be Guy's way. I have a lot of people that have a lot of great ideas, and it doesn't always have to be, it's the name of the band is, Guy Fieri or Knuckle Sandwich, but everybody collectively gets to write the music and create the ideas and the energy. And, you know, we try to make sure that, you know, not everybody's doing the same job. So it's, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I saw you, I saw you tape an episode of Guy's Grocery Games, and it, what impressed me the most about it was what a calm, kind of quiet, you know, organized set it was. You seem to be hosting and show running at the same time, which is hard enough. But everyone just kind of like knew what to do next. I mean, is that just the product of 5, 6 seasons of this show, or is there some other special secret?
I think that, you know, I'll give you the same consideration of a race car team. You know what the objective is. You bring people in that are real pros. You establish the curriculum and the guidelines, and you ask everybody to do their job 110%, and then it gets done. But you have to be willing to write the script, the structure, you have to establish all the different pieces that have to happen. So I was trying to give you some cool race car terminology for you.
No, you got it. Yeah, I got it. Yeah.
But you know, if you ever get a chance to go watch Clint Bowyer's team go over the wall,
yeah,
in the middle of a NASCAR race when everything's on the line and they're dealing with every facet from, you know, death to success to safety to, you know, all this stuff happens and everybody does it great.
Yeah. Pit crews and film crews and really good kitchens. There's a lot of parallels there for sure.
Thank you very much. Now, yeah, that's it. I should have just said that and shut up.
No. Well, but you know, the people are here to hear your words today, guy. Not me fucking yapping. But yeah,
summed it up. Yeah. That's exactly what it is. It is people. You know what it is? I think too often people go around assuming people should get it, and assuming people should have it. And this is the example that I've used with my team forever. And I'll use an example like Peyton Manning, you know, great quarterback, phenomenal quarterback, one of the best. Peyton Manning was quarterback forever. And then Peyton Manning went to the NFL and Peyton Manning, you know, broke records. But Peyton Manning always had a quarterback coach. And yeah. I say to people all the time, don't you think he figured out how to play with the quarterback? No, because you need to have continued calibration, and continued focus and refocus and perspective. And it's all these things. And so we have to be a great team, continue to evaluate ourselves, continue to recalibrate ourselves, continue to, you know. And so I tell them, whenever you think that we're going over something again for the 50th time, it's because we're going – take football players in practice. Why do they have practice the whole week before they go to the game? You know, haven't they been doing this? Don't they make millions of dollars?
Well, so no, who coaches Guy?
Going to be great.
Who coaches Guy?
Oh, everybody coaches Guy. Everybody. Okay. I try to, and I'm also I'm almost also my own weirdo. You know, my discipline is for myself.
Ridiculous. Yeah, I know how you feel.
I have to make sure I don't eat myself. You know, that I don't eat myself up, that I don't internalize too much and go. But no, my dad is my, you know, he's my Mick, he's my corner man, my wife too. I mean, and my friends and my kids, my COO, my Reed Strathern, Chef Anthony Hoi Fong. I mean, I just
that's you got a lot of coaches.
Please don't ever bite your tongue. It's like calling you about cars. You know, I can sit here and theorize that I am going to go get whatever. But what I chose to do is call you and get the real authority on what's going on with it. And I've always been that way, to really employ the people and the friends and the opportunities that I have around me to make make the best decisions that I can.
There you go. I like that you know where to go for cars. I like this. can we talk about cars for a minute? I think the most unfair thing in the to Guy is that the internet will never forget the picture of him with all the yellow cars. And I've been in his garage, and that's not honest now. It's not a current reflection. So tell me about your relationship with cars, Guy.
I was standing in the opening of my first restaurant. About week number two, restaurant's packed. One of my best friends from college is with me, and we're standing there. His name's Bags, Baglietto, Brian. And he says, look at you, man. You did it. You opened your first restaurant. And he said, you're going to be really successful. And you know the only reason you're going to be successful? It's just so you can pay for all the shit that you want. that's the little thing. Just so you can have all these cars that you want. And it was an ongoing joke, of my car passion. And I had, I don't know where it is, but I have a little 70 Chevelle die-cast metal, buy it from the back of the magazine, four payments of $59.95 or whatever.
Yeah.
And that was my first Chevelle that I had. And I was on a Chevelle hunt forever, for like 5 years. And I saved all my money in a boot in my closet. And then I had enough money to buy my Chevelle, and I opened my first restaurant. And so the money had to go to that. And then I saved all my money again. And then we had our first son. And so finally, I saved the money again, and I came up with enough money to go buy my first hot rod, to buy my first Chevelle. And I just love them. I mean, people will come over here and say, I've got two cars. Like, this car has 12 miles on it, 5 years old. I'm like, yeah? And like, you don't drive them all. I said, I drive them. But it's not like I have to just stare at the one piece of artwork on the wall. It's art to me. I mean, yeah. I walk out there and sit in my gym is all filled with the cars. I work out and I have my, cars sitting next to me.
So yeah, guy's got a cool garage / gym in his place.
I love cars.
But so is that yellow, the yellow Chevelle was your first one?
Yeah.
And you still got that
one. I told the guy when I bought it from him. I never would have bought a yellow car in my life. Matter of fact, I didn't go look at the car because it was yellow. This is the truth. So, I don't know if you want all this bullshit, but I'll tell it to you.
Anyway. No, dude. Lay it on me, man.
You guys can edit this out. So, everybody knew I was looking for Chevelles, okay? Everybody knew. I had been up and down the coast of California looking for Chevelles. And I didn't have a lot of money. I think I had like, $15,000 or something. But this is also 97.
Uh-huh.
So this is 1997. So I'm looking around for these Chevelles, and a buddy of mine, Tony Lopez, calls me and says, hey, I just saw in the newspaper, remember when the cars were in newspapers? I saw in the newspaper there's a Chevelle for sale. It's a 71 big block, 4-speed yellow. And I'm like, yeah, man, I saw that, but I don't want to be yellow. He goes, well, you got to go look at it at least. Get a perspective on what the car is. I drive up. It was my wife. Hunter was two. I drive up, and there's this yellow Chevelle sitting there, yellow with black stripes, and I just died. I couldn't believe it. It was the coolest yellow I'd ever seen. It wasn't this yellow, and it wasn't that neon yellow. Just this, and it's called. It's got a terrible name too. It's like sunflower yellow. Well. Ironically enough, there's a story behind that, and I have the whole article and everything about that car and about how many were made of that yellow. Blah, blah, blah. So anyway,
that's a factory yellow. I didn't realize that's a factory yellow. Yeah, oh, cool.
Factory yellow. So bench seat, original bench seat, factory yellow. The Muncie M22 rock crusher in it.
Uh huh.
22 or 21? Which one?
I don't know.
Crusher. Anyway,
I don't know.
So
sorry.
Anyway, here's the story. So I go look at the car. I look at the car, and I go home, and Lori and I are talking about it. And she said, well, what are you going to do about this car? Are you going to buy the car? And I said, I don't have enough money. I think the guy wanted $20,000, and I had $10,000. She said, well, you need to get the car so you can knock it off, so you can quit, obsessing about this car thing. So I called my business partner. We had these restaurants together, and I said, hey, can I borrow $2,500 from you? Again, that's a lot of money, man. 1997, I'm a little restaurant owner, And he says, yeah, okay, I'll lend it to you. So we drive over to the guy's house that has the car, and he's a baker at Costco. And he has to sell the car because he and his wife, who had passed away, had built the car together, and his new wife doesn't want him to have the car. She wants a Harley.
Oh, now here's motivation. Now we're talking.
Okay.
Now we've got this negotiating power. Oh, yeah, there's
that
yellow.
This gets weird. Yeah, that's the car right there.
Yeah, there
it is. And I still have all those cars. I have every car but the big 45, the Kodiak. I don't have that.
You still have all of them?
Yeah.
Oh. I guess you got to spread them out. You got other cars, too. You got other cars that aren't yellow now.
Yeah. So anyhow, long story short, we go for a ride in the car. Okay, we're driving the car around, my business partner, myself, and the owner of the car. And all of a sudden, I realized that in my passion to get in this car and go for a drive, I have left the $15,000 on the dashboard of my pickup truck in front of this guy's house.
Oh, yikes. Oh, God.
So we scream back to the guy's house. I'm positive someone stole the money. Or maybe it's on my bench seat of my truck. Long story short, we sit there and I tell the guy how much he's got, and he's like, nah, it's just not enough, man. It's, you know, it's just not enough. My business partner says, hey, buddy, guy doesn't know I'm going to do this, but if I give $3,000 more, will you sell him the car, please? We're losing him. He's obsessed with this car.
We're losing him.
The guy, and my business partner is a pretty crafty guy. He gives him the money. He's holding the money.
Mm-hmm.
He says, hang on a second. Gives us back the money, goes inside, brings his wife out. He says, all right, how about you give us gift certificates to your restaurant for the balance? I'm like, you got it, man.
Sweet.
You got it. Whatever you want. You know?
Yeah. That's not a good...
I ran into the guy several times, really neat guy. His name was John. And I ran into him several times, and I told him when I bought the car, I said, I'll never sell the car, I promise. I'll be living in the car before I'll ever sell the car. And as the car developed through the years, you know, I did a frame off. I've repainted it, you know, got it perfect. I mean, you name it, I've done something to it. So
it's I like that story a lot. That's a good story. And is that how you ended up with all those other yellow cars too, just to match that one? It just sort of became your thing?
Don't know. Just weird shit.
Random.
You know, I'm there at Barrett Jackson, and it's my birthday, and there's a 69 Stingray, you know, 427 that's getting ready to go to auction. And
how can you not?
Know.
No, I don't know. When I went in your garage when I was at your house last year, and you said yeah, no more yellow and no more convertibles. I'm done. Which I understand. You get too famous for either of those things.
Actually, you remember that. That's funny. You know, I don't know. I'm all over the board right now. Like, I'm looking at a CUDA right now. I think I want to diversify. Yeah, got to, you know, maybe get a CUDA. I mean, that 70, 71 thing. Really do want a 77 Trans Am.
Oh, really, man. Those are coming up, man. Everybody wants a screaming chicken right now, and they are coming up. You better get on one quick before.
Yeah, before I don't know. I'm all over the board. I love cars, though. If I could park them inside the house, I would.
Well, you kind of do. Your garage is finished like a home. It's pretty epic, actually. I'm incredibly about your garage.
I just need more. I want it to be quite. There's a buddy of mine here in town named Bill Denbesti, and Bill's got one of the greatest car collections I've ever seen in my life, and. I said to him one time, I said, I just build my house in the center of this car garage. You know, he's got 500 cars.
Oh, Jesus.
And to me, oh, God. Next time you come up here, I got to take you there.
I'll make
and
a special it trip Bill, for that one.
It was Bill and Carol Denbesti, Bill and Carol Shelby that gave me my Cobra.
Oh.
Bill and Carol were in business together when Carol started making the Cobras out of South Africa. And I got to meet Carol and become friends with him. And I got a picture of him right there on my wall. But we were, it was great. And so that's one of my favorite. That's got a monster 427 in it.
Did Carol serve you as chili, more importantly?
Carol did serve us as chili. And yes, and Carol and I it's great because I have one of my favorite pictures, and it's in the garage right next to the car, is a picture of Carol wearing his knuckle sandwich jacket that I
need. That's awesome. That's killer. Yeah. I, that's definitely a keeper right there. How'd you like the chili?
Oh, it was dynamite. Carol's dynamite. Carol could have made me, you know, and we actually had it at Bill's house. I cooked dinner and Carol made the chili.
I went to that to the Terlingua chili cook-off for Carol's 85th birthday as part of a thing with Ford, and it was badass, man. That little place, Terlingua, is so far in the middle of nowhere. There's one police officer for the whole county. So you'd see the cop just drive the other way, and you'd go, okay, well, they're over there now, so the street races are that way. And everybody would just bring out their Shelbys and race on the street. It was absolutely ridiculous. It was so silly. But, like, everything in that whole town was Shelby, Shelby, Shelby. I mean, all, you know, three stores or whatever.
Such a neat guy. He was such an amazing story. And and then I went and saw Ford versus Ferrari. And it's a good flick.
So much more.
Great flick. Horrible ending. Oh.
Yeah, so, you know, it's a depressing ending, but
honest, I was pissed. I mean, I was like mad, man. I wanted to talk to Carol about this. But no, what a neat guy. And if you ever got a chance to really talk to him, and he's just a very sweet, very endearing, very knowledgeable, very just a really neat guy. I thought they did a good job. I thought they made Matt Damon.
It's a little short.
Maybe, yeah.
No, I thought Christian Bale just like killed Ken Miles. And actually, I got to tell you, I really like how realistic the portrayal of his crash was. I think that sort of, you know, just another day at the track, just testing, going about your business, sitting in a lawn chair with a hat kind of half covering your head, waiting for the driver to come back with notes, and then you just hear that kind of thud. I really felt that was such a – it's really if you've ever seen a big crash on the side of a racetrack like that, it's like that's kind of how it happens. You know, I thought that was a very real moment.
Yeah, I loved the movie and didn't know the history of the movie to that degree. But I tell you that it's tough when it's a movie like that because people are like, well, I don't like cars. You know, I don't like racing. Oh, you got to watch it. There's so much more to the
Yeah, it's a people story. Yeah, it's a people story.
It was pretty amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, what the red Camaro you use in Triple D, is there any story with that or is it just a prop car that looks cool?
What do you think?
I think you chose it, but I don't think you have any particular attachment to it, if I had to take a guess.
Well, at least you're not psychic. You're not going to make any money working at the fair with that one, Matt.
Well, okay.
Here's what happened. When we first started Triple D, the way the show got started is we did a one-hour pilot. And the production company at the time, which I wasn't the producer, we went around to all these different cities around the country and shot the location and contacted the local car company or local car clubs and said, do you have a car we can borrow? And so we drove a variety. We drove a Cuda, I actually drove a Ford Mustang, which, you know, I'm not a Ford guy. We drove my Chevelle. My yellow Chevelle was in the show when we shot here in California. And we drove, one of the cars we drove was a 67 Camaro, small block. So when the show got picked up, and we had to have convertible because a lot of the shot was being inside the car.
Yeah.
And if you watch a show, you watch a movie or anything, they have to light inside of the car to light people's faces up because with a coupe, you can't, you know, there's no
light. Yeah. It's
so
the
we
worst.
We had to have a convertible. We had to have a convertible to be able to hold the camera so the camera guy could ride with me in the car. And we had to have a convertible so we could, you know, have light on the face when we were doing the long shot.
And you get that the crane. It makes a crane shot possible as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So all those things considered, when the show got picked up, the producer called me and said, okay, what kind of car do you want to drive? I said, well, you know, come on. Nothing better than that red. And that was it. Oh. We show up about a month later to go shoot the show. He went and bought the actual red Camaro.
Nice.
And I'm like, oh, geez. You know, he bought that exact car. And the car wasn't in the best condition. And it used to drive me crazy. because the car would stall, and you know, crowds of people were going to be there, and on and on and on. So when we changed production companies, and I became the EP along with the Citizen Pictures, who now does it. When we did that, I said, "Okay, hold up, everybody. I will take care of the car. Okay, I mean my baby." So I went and found a RS SS 68.
Uh-oh. Oh, no! Uh-oh.
Speed, Washington, and did the whole thing. Did the whole thing. Went through the whole car. And,
We're choppy.
It's a 2012 1968 Camaro. So it's still...
Oh, there. No! Guy, you're getting a little choppy there. Are you there? Yep. You cool? Hello?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay, cool. Sorry. I basically heard that you put a 2012 powertrain into a 68 Camaro. Is that pretty much what you just said?
Oh,
cool. All right, yeah. You got a little choppy for a second. Okay. So, yeah. So, it works for television. Excellent.
No, I mean, everything about that car is 1,000% done right. I mean, it's a monster. I mean, this thing, I have classic rims on it that are custom one-off built, widened. They're supposed to be the 15-inch rim, and I think these are 18s or 17s.
Yeah, yeah. So you got the old look, but you fit the good tires. Yeah, yeah. Cool. What else is in the Chef Fieri personal collection these days? I know you got some trucks, some toys.
Just built a C10 one-ton long bed 70. I just put headers on it. Gotta love anytime you can put headers on.
Yeah, long tubes really make get the job done. They really make it work.
Come on,
they bring it all together.
Get that. Got my daily driver is my 1-ton diesel dually GMC. I love that. I bought it to haul our rescue trailer around. I built a 48-foot-long rescue trailer that I custom built. It's a kitchen, and we use it to go handle these disasters that we have here in Northern California. So when I built it, I had to get something big to haul it with. So I went and got the 1-ton, and it's just on the verge of being not the right truck. So then Freightliner came through and gave me a medium duty semi.
Oh, sweet.
That we haul it with now.
When you're building a 48-foot kitchen truck or trailer, are you starting with like a race hauler? What do you start with?
Well, so we were going to do it wrong, Matt. We were going to do it wrong, which I've done a lot of wrong, okay? I've done a lot of shit where, you know, you go into – it's like when your buddy went and put the blower on the Vega.
Oh,
you
know? Yeah. Yeah.
You know, your buddy's got the car and he just keeps pumping money into a bad idea. It's one bitchin' 67 Impala four-door, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe you should have started with a better canvas, pal.
Yeah. Yeah, we call it tuning out of class.
Okay, well, yeah. I've done my fair share of that shit.
Yeah.
So we were sitting around on a Sunday. We were talking about getting this rescue trailer because we're having these fires. We have some smaller trailers that we use, big barbecue trailer, a wood-fired pizza trailer. But when we're trying to feed thousands and thousands of people, it wasn't working. So saw online this carnival trailer where they were doing food vending out of it. And it was, 40-some feet long, and it had all the kind of stuff we wanted on it. And so I sent one of my guys down to look at it in Central Valley, and he said, the guy wants $100,000 for it, and probably going to be $50,000 to get it up to speed, and da-da-da-da. I'm like, okay. I get the manufacturer. Let's just call the manufacturer.
Yeah, yeah.
Things, So we ended up calling the manufacturer back in Georgia, talking to the guy. The guy knew who I was, and there we started from scratch. And they build the trailer. They build all the equipment, and then they build the trailer around the equipment. So sometimes you can't even get the equipment out. And I started planning this and designing this with this guy, and he says to date, nobody has jammed that much shit inside of a trailer.
Awesome.
I mean, I have a Skydeck, observation Skydeck, four TVs, full stereo system, fryers, tilt skillet, big mixer, freezer, fridge, huge smoker, And we've been able to feed, like just last week or a couple weeks ago, we went and fed 2,000 firefighters.
That's so sick.
Battling the blazes. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
How closely are you at your home and ranch to the fires?
Well, last year it burned right here to the backyard.
Yeah, I remember that. That was crazy.
We stayed and fought it, a bunch of my buddies and a bunch of my guys on my team. This year we had fires all around us again, very close to the ranch. It's burned the ranch before. We burned 60 acres. My wife and I were in Croatia, and the big fire came, and a bunch of my friends and my dad all drove to the ranch and stayed at the ranch for 3 days and fought the fire right there on the road of the ranch.
That's so crazy.
60 acres, yeah. Oh, so fortunately this year it didn't hit us real hard, but I'll tell you something, man. It is some scary stuff, and those firefighters are they're superheroes. They're just amazing people. I don't know, next time you see a first responder or a firefighter, you can go up and give them a hug and buy them a cup of coffee, buy them a round of drinks, something. You know, the shit that we watched when it came down through here, burned our solar panels up. I mean, everything was on fire. And these dudes are just cool, calm, and collected. And they're just like, wait for it. Like, we're wasting the water right now because we're pumping water out of the pool.
Yeah.
You know, with what's called a trash pump, you know, blowing down this, you know. And they just
like you would use if your basement was flooded kind of thing, right?
Yeah, this is a little bit more aggressive. This is 200 gallons a minute.
Nice. You know,
with full-blown fire hoses, you know. And we've learned a lot from it. Like, we have goats. We have 600 goats, and we used the goats for weed abatement to keep the weeds down. So when the fire came through, there was nothing to burn. And that's what we've been doing at the ranch since I've had the ranch, you know, forever. And so we were in a really good space. The firefighters were actually said they would stay and help just because we had taken it so seriously about how we took care of our property called, you know, making defensible space. But, so after that, I told our foreman, Disco, I said, hey, you go get two trash pumps, you get them on trailers, you get all the hoses, everything that we need. So in the event that this is going to happen again, we're ready to rock and roll. So we have one at the ranch and we have one.
That's impressive. Man, this is crazy what we have to do to prepare for this kind of stuff right now. I mean, it's nuts that it's like, it's so predictable. Like, you know, it's going to happen again. You're going to need that trash pump. You're not buying that and it's going to collect dust. You're going to be pulling that fucking thing out every year. Scary stuff.
I mean, everybody had to get certified and send me a video of them knowing how to run the trash pump. Everybody.
Really? Oh, that's a good idea.
All the guys.
Yeah,
everybody had to do it. And we did it with propane, so we didn't have a bad gas issue.
Uh-huh.
So we got propane tanks. And it's great because they're kind of like little rickshaw carts. It can hook up to the, you know, to the side-by-sides and get pulled around. Or it has a handle on it that if two guys want to get it,
you can just push it.
You know, old fire truck, you know, like they used to do in the city. You know, everybody was on it and was pulling it down the street. So.
Yeah, like fire brigade.
Old school fire brigade.
I'm picturing
them
going down like a railroad track doing the pumper thing, though.
It's almost that.
That's crazy. Yeah, I have here at the building, we've got an auxiliary pump that I have to plug into this thing if we lose power and it's a flood and it's a big problem. Yeah, but. Man, trailer-mounted fire pumps is not something I bet you thought we'd be dealing with.
I was expecting to ever – yeah, exactly.
That's just crazy, man. That's crazy. Are you back in production yet? I know you kind of have your own production company and your own facilities. Can you make shows right now?
So we started as soon as COVID hit. I came to my whole team and I said, listen, can't go out and do Triple D. And we really need to inspire people to eat out. I mean, hence with our buddy Cuban today. So we started shooting Triple D takeout. So what I would do is I contacted all of my, or some of my favorite Triple D joints. I said, hey, listen, Hunter and Ryder and I are at home and we've been eating what we've been eating forever. So how about you do me a favor? Send me some of your, send me some fish from Hawaii, you know, to our boy Reno. And, that's how I got started. People started sending it to us, and so we'd get them sending it to us, you know, partially cooked or partially prepared. We were shooting it on GoPros. We just put GoPros all over, and Ryder's got the GoPro wand. We just took a TV and put it out there on the patio and did a big Zoom session, and that's how the whole thing got going, and the ratings blew up.
That's so awesome.
And so we just shot another, I think we've shot probably 20 of them.
Really? Oh, that's so great.
And then we're in the process right now of doing, so that was Triple D delivery, or Triple D takeout, where they sent the food to us, and then we took the food here. And now we just created Triple G, Guys Grocery Games, delivery. So where people order their groceries now and have them delivered to the doorstep, or you know, to the front door. So that's what we did. So Hunter and I put the boxes together of the ingredients, send it to the chef's houses around the country, and then do a big conference, you know, video conference with them. And then we give them the challenges, but they play in their own home. So we just started shooting those. Oh,
that's a perfect show for that's funny. A perfect show for Carl, because Carl always used to say, "I love cooking on TV because if I tell you it tastes good, you have no choice but to believe me."
Listen, Matt. If you wait till you see the show's air, they haven't aired yet. When you see the show's air, you'll hear how many times we call it the Cuban. Because here's what happens: there's nobody there to judge it.
So I know.
When the chef takes a bite of it. When the chef takes a bite of it, they have to sell what's going on. And the example I say is, Carl would have won this. He would be
every time. I love cooking on TV because if I tell you it's delicious, you have no choice but to believe me. I'm so glad that so much content over the last 3 or 4 years exists still on the internet of Carl. I go watch at least once a week. I watch his old YouTube channel where he just sits there with an iPhone eating fast food and commenting on it. I think there is no more authentic quality content on the internet than that. It's the most honest that content is. When he sits at McDonald's and goes, "The fish volunteered for this sandwich," the filet of fish, and then in the next breath he eats a French fry and he goes, "Any 5-star chef in the world would be proud to serve this French fry." You know, talking about a McDonald's fry, which is approaching. I think the democracy of food, you know what I mean? The objectivity of McDonald's can make something delicious that other chefs will envy, but also this disgusting fish sandwich, I think, is one of the things I really liked about him. You know, it wasn't all 5-star snooty stuff, and it wasn't just, you know, worship of the greasy spoons either. It was a healthy balance, you know?
Well, Carl, is what you see is what you get.
Yeah.
And then a little bit of creepy, freaky shit underneath.
With just a hint of crime, maybe.
Just a bit of wackiness.
Well, food is an interesting thing. Food opens the door to all kinds of worlds, right? You know, everybody eats. You know, you could be.
It's the common denominator of all people.
Yeah, you know,
it's the common denominator. I've got all that. What do I got going there? I got big sun something.
Oh, it's all right. Yeah, it's highlighting you like an angel. You've really got a saintly halo going.
No, food's a common denominator of all people. You might not all like the same sports and like the same topics and say, but everybody loves food. Loves food. And I think that's what I love about it. You know, of course I wanted to be a rock star, and I wanted to do rodeo when I was a kid, and I wanted to race cars when I was a kid. I had all kinds of stuff that I wanted to do. And fortunately for me, the common denominator of cooking, I get to meet all the rock stars and have all, you know, I get to sit in the middle of it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a really fun thing. And it's all I've ever been good at. So
I think that's horseshit, guy. Because you are a showrunner, a fucking director, you're an interior decorator, you know, you worked on the design of your homes, that awesome round barn of yours that's like the coolest building I've ever been in. I love that shit.
That is a cool building.
It's a cool building. Yeah. No, I think don't sell yourself short. I wanna let
don't
you
sell
go.
Sell yourself short, Judge. You're a tremendous slouch. By the way, that table you have right there is money.
Isn't that nice? Look at that. That's a Live Edge black walnut table with the lakes and rivers kind of resin fill. I've always wanted a table like this, and now we have one.
Bro, we make that. So we have all of our counters in the house are from Amish barnwood that we took, and we've gone and make this kind of stuff, and we just finally finished the pool house, and we did all Live Edge.
It's dope, isn't it?
Redwood. Oh, my God. Dude, that's gorgeous.
Love this. I didn't personally make it, but a friend of mine did make it. Yeah, it was made for me for this room. Yeah, it's cool.
Your friend needs to be is he selling them?
Yeah, his name is Mickey Iwasaki, and you can find him at Sunset Projects on Instagram. He's out of San Diego. Great dude.
How was this- that? There you go, Mickey. How was that set up for you, pal?
There you go. guy drives commerce, man. That's what Triple D does. Triple D makes restaurant owners money. That's how that show works.
Yeah. No, it's we've done 14, almost 1,500 locations.
That's so crazy.
We've been doing it for a long time. It's funny. I was one of my cousins was having a going away party, and all of his college friends were on there, and it's so funny when these young college students will go, I grew up watching your show with my parents when I was
in
third grade. And I go, oh, yeah. awesome, you know?
Yeah.
It's great that a show has been able to do what it's been able to do, and there's so many great people that make that show happen, and it does. It's like winning the restaurant lottery. I mean, it's no restaurant could ever afford to have that much advertising or that much exposure. You know, here's a bunch of my guys loading in for the show. We're shooting tomorrow.
When
a bunch of my guys are walking in, right? They're all walking in right now, wearing Ruizing shirts.
Well, did you see my shirt? I'm wearing the Carl shirt right now. I'm wearing it today. The "Don't trust your own taste. Chances are you have none" shirts that we made. I sent one to your house. Did you get it?
I have it. Oh no, I have a whole pile of them. We were wearing them last night, and two people were stealing them.
And I've got the Ruizing wristband today, which I got from you, which is very. Yep. A lot of people have asked me where to get that. I was like, well, you got to get it right from Guy. It's kind of a thing, you know.
I've had this on since his funeral. I've never taken it off.
You had it the whole time. Good for you. You are the friend of friends. You are a G. Before I let you go, I really appreciate your time. I know how busy you are. Your kitchen.
Awesome. You always take the time for me whenever I call you, and I'm still stuck on that electric Porsche. By the way,
I think you should buy a Taycan. I told you then, and I will tell you again that you should buy a Taycan.
I'm always worried about first editions.
I agree. I totally agree with you. I think you should buy one next year.
Right. So let's stay on that. But your video was epic. I mean, I don't.
Thank you.
I've turned so many people onto it. But I do need to get one. You know, we're here in California, where you know the land of Tesla, and I think Teslas are awesome. But boy, your video of you driving that, I was like, wait.
Taycan's a different thing. Yeah, it's a different thing. You got to. We'll get you a test drive. If we get you a test drive, that'll really.
Oh,
that'll
you know
start
that, what that means. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
I know.
The first hit three.
I know. Do you know the comedian Tom Segura? Have you met him?
I know the name, but
no. I got him hooked up with a McLaren for the weekend, and now he's like, he's just ready to spend his entire life savings on a McLaren.
He was looking at everything the other day.
It is a drug, man. It is definitely a drug.
Oh, I am. You know what I do is I have an ongoing flirt with cars that I'm always working a deal. There's always something. Like I have a K5 Blazer being built right now in, what do you want? My kid's staring out there. I have a K5 Blazer being built down in Arizona right now. That's a big block, supercharged, frame off monster that we're going to build, run on 37s and just, you know.
Nice.
So, and I have a 64 Cadillac that I've been, Eldorado that we've been, or Coupe de Ville that we've been working on for 7 years. I just got my supercharger put in my 64 Lincoln Continental.
Oh boy, you've been spending pandemic wisely. You're on the full.
No. And these are cars that I've had, Matt. And I've got cars that I haven't driven in 5 years.
Oh my God, you have hoes in different area codes. That's what you have. You are a married man with hoes in different area codes for sure.
So my Chevelles are coming back this week. I have two matching Chevelles, 71 big blocks, one convertible, one hardtop. Just amazing. And they're getting, and one's yellow and one's black.
You've got he's got rods in every fire, man, every fire. Before I let you go, when I went to your house, your kitchen, yep. I have told so many people how amazing your kitchen was. And obviously you're you, and not everybody
would have a restaurant grade kitchen in their home the way that you do. But I was so impressed, and I wanted to ask you, for the home chefs out there, what are a couple just quick easy tips to get the most bang for your buck improvement in your home kitchen? What are some musts in a home kitchen to really get to the next level if you could swing it?
The number one thing that people, I think, fail at in designing their kitchen is enough counter space to be able to do their mise en place, to be able to cook. Because when you're tripping over yourself to get stuff done and you're moving stuff, it just complicates things. And the setup to cooking is so much of the whole game. You know, it's like in a car. You know, the prep work on the car is what makes the difference if the paint job is right.
Totally.
Or not,
totally.
Kind of stuff. So, like that, how I tied that in? I don't have
you
to
did.
Any of those.
You're a master.
So enough counter space to work on, enough BTUs in the stove. I mean, you got to get the BTUs up there. And that's your British thermal unit. That's how hot does the burner get? I'm not an induction guy. I'm not an electric guy. I'm a gas guy. You know, it's got to be gas. It's got to be tons of BTU. Find whatever you're going to buy. Just make sure it's got a lot of BTUs.
Guy's stove has the biggest fucking flame on it I've ever seen in a home stove. He pulls out. We're sitting there, and I go, "What the fuck is this gigantic stove?" And he goes, "You want something?" And he pulls a lobster tail out of the fridge. When I tell you, he cooked this fucking lobster tail in like 30 seconds. Amazing. The flame was enormous. It was like concentric rings of fire. It was so sick. It was amazing.
36,000 BTUs per...
Wait. You broke up. Wait, how many? Say that again. What's the math there?
36,000 BTUs per burner. The average home kitchen stove is 12 to 15.
Yeah, he's got the power.
So more than double, yeah.
He's got the power, yeah.
Oh, and have I made mistakes and had things over there simmering and think that I've got it, you know, enough time to go run and do something and come back and has the pot been destroyed? Oh yeah. Do we have to take the smoke alarm out of the kitchen on a regular basis?
That's awesome.
But I would say another one. I'll tell you that's a really important one is. Foot pedals.
Yeah, that was Carl. That was what Carl told me. Carl, when he was in my kitchen, he goes, "Cuz, I got to get you on a pedal game. Got to get you on a pedal game, cuz. I priced it out. The pedals are fucking expensive, guy. They're really expensive.
When I go to buy my car, am I going to go to the lot and just buy it, or am I going to call my buddy Matt and say, "Hey, Matt."
Yep.
Oh, I see what you're laying down here, buddy. I see what you're laying down. See, I'm going to call my friend Chef Fietti over here. He's going to make some pedals appear.
I think that kitchen designs don't get kitchen. I mean, food is the epicenter, and
yeah.
I think that we spend as much. I bet you we spend more time as a family in our kitchen than we spend in any other room besides, you know, sleeping.
Me too. 100% me too.
So take that time and really design what your flow of your food is and where you're at and how things work. And just, you know, I think that bay sinks are better than split sinks. You know, I think that you get more use out of the sink.
Yeah, you can't fit a baking sheet in a split sink. Split totally sinks great. Suck.
Big basin.
As someone who grew up in a kosher neighborhood, I know how badly split sinks suck.
we're getting ready to do a Hanukkah edition of Triple G delivery. So I got some great chefs coming in for that. It's gonna be a good one.
You know, tonight to honor Carl in my home when he came to visit me here, the day I decided to buy my Lamborghini, Carl was here and he made a matzo ball soup in my kitchen that he made from like nothing. He made it from just like shit that was around. And I go, "Carl, what do you know about matzo ball soup?" He goes, "Cuz I won Triple G on a panel full of Jews. Fuck, I know about matzo ball soup." I don't know if you can confirm that, guy. Was there an incident where Carl made a matzo ball soup and won on a panel full of Jews?
Who knows?
Either way,
I used to say to the Cuban all the time, don't let the details interrupt a good story, right?
Yeah. But he made this soup, and I didn't write it down. And so it took me like 8 tries from memory to make it correctly the way that he did. I finally can do it right, and I wrote it down. And so we're going to make the Cuban's matzo ball soup tonight, and we're going to serve it with hot dogs because that's what Carl would have done,
beauty.
Right?
Beauty.
Why not?
Guy, I can't tell you how much I appreciate your time both today and a year ago when you invited me into your home. I can't tell you how much I appreciate that all the food questions I used to text Carl about that were really dumb, I can now text you about, and you have answers.
It's tit for tat, man, because I'll be sending you back the same questions about cars.
Dude, the lines are open.
That's the beauty of it.
The lines are open. It's always here, man. Thank you to you for joining us, and say hi to Hunter and Ryder and the whole family, and stay safe with the fires out there. And for everyone out there, Guy's Restaurant Workers Relief Fund, where can they find information on that, Guy?
Well, you know, the fund has been, I shouldn't say the fund has been stopped, but after we did it, we raised $24 million.
Oof.
And it was kind of that thing where everybody told me I was crazy, which I've heard a lot in my life. But I said, no, we're really going to raise a bunch of money. And I sent 43 messages to all the top CEOs that have anything to do with the restaurant industry. Coke, Pepsi, Tito, vodka, Uber Eats, Cargill, you name it. I sent them a video individually and said, here's what's going on. We need some help. And people jumped in and people helped and people gave them a bunch of money. And we gave out over 40,000. I think he got up to $50,500 grants, free $500 grants to restaurant employees. Now, it was just 50,000. I mean, there was 6 million people without jobs, but at least 50,000 people.
Yeah, it's something.
And I've run into so many restaurant employees that have come up to me and said, I got the money. Thank you. So it was an amazing program. But, you know, like I'm saying to everybody right now, I think the best way we can support our industry, one, is go out and tip big. You know, these restaurant employees really need it. Two, do delivery, do to go. Use the delivery services or go sell. There's, you know, now we can, because back then there was no restaurants even open. So you had the money and you wanted to help and there was nothing to do, go to the fund. Now what we're saying to folks, please go to your restaurants. Please go to your restaurants, buy gift certificates. Go to your restaurants and buy somebody else a meal. Go, you know, whatever. But that's I think, the best way to help folks right now.
Yeah, for sure. I agree, man. Thanks. And when we sold these T-shirts to the Cuban, we donated all the proceeds. It was about $14,000 we donated to Guy's relief fund back in March.
And it's just been you know what it was, Matt? It was, and you were so awesome for that, by the way. It wasn't for a lot of people didn't get the money. It was about people being recognized and appreciated. Because the restaurant industry has always been there for us. You know, it's always been there to go for the celebrations, the good and the bad celebrations. You go there for the, you know, the champion. You go for your kids. You go hit them up for gifts to your kid's soccer team. You know, you get all these things. The restaurant business has always been there for us. And so here was a time when the industry really needed us. And we got to go and help. And people, even if they didn't get the check, they felt the hug. You know, they felt the love. They felt the appreciation. So.
It was tough. You know, I live in Venice Beach, and part of the reason I live in Venice Beach is because I can walk to 50 amazing restaurants at any time. And so to have those 2 months were to see the boards up and all that stuff, it was really, really bad. And I love what they're doing now, getting rid of street parking spaces and putting outdoor dining like they do in the town squares in Europe.
Exactly.
Fabulous. Absolutely fabulous. Fuck the street parking. There's huge pay lots right there. Let people pay. You know what I mean? Who cares about street parking?
Exactly. Well, no, thanks for having me, man. You're a man of the people, and you offer yourself to everybody in so many different ways. And so when you asked, it was funny because my team, you know, in the weekly meeting said, car show, car podcast, smoking tire, what do you got going on? You're busy, you're shooting. I said, it's a good buddy of mine. He's a Cuban brother. He gets it. And it's like, and, you know, and they all kind of look at me and just go,
whatever.
We never really know why you do what you do when you do it. So go ahead.
Thanks, Guy.
You know.
Thank you, sir.
Hang, man.
Thank you, thank
you. And thanks for the invite. And I'm down anytime. Let's talk cars.
Yeah, I'll grab a Taycan from Porsche and I'll come up to Santa Rosa and say what's up soon. Yeah.
just figure out how you're gonna fly yourself home.
My man. That's our show, Chef Guy Fieri on the Smoking Tire Podcast. We're paying tribute to the Cuban Carl Ruiz today. Our late friend died 1 year ago today. He was a G, and we will miss him every single day. That's our show. The Smoking Tire Podcast is powered by Shout Engine. Get your own podcast at shoutengine.com. It's easy. All you need is a microphone, a connection to the internet, and ideally something to say. See you soon. Bye.